Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, September the 10th, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's a delight to have you with us, and I understand Rex is on the line from the prison, and so let's hear from him. He started Laws of Living today. So, Rex, how do you be, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Michael and Jeannie?
Awesome, blessed, and highly favored, enjoying a beautiful, sunny Ozark day.
Awesome. Yeah, we're supposed to have over 90 degrees, and I think it's every bit of that already. So very
cool.
Hot.
So how'd this morning go at jail?
Well, it went well. It was one of those examples of the best laid plans of mice and men.
Yes. Tell
and
us about
Tony
it.
Tony and I showed up, and one thing after another, they finally got the inmates in the chapel at about 9:30. They had some problems and messed up with the, you know, the ordering of the calling of all the prisoners. And so I'm going to vie with the chaplain. I hope that we start next week, because this week it was just an hour and we didn't do the evaluation because they wouldn't let us bring in pencils. Well, they were actually pens, and they changed the rule on us since last time because they evidently make tattoo guns out of the ink pens. So that was just one of the many things that had happened. But we did have a pretty good session. I just pretty much ad-libbed. I had a couple questions about how it went for the 16-day intensive. We acknowledged that we're going to be giving them certifications for participation and certifications for, authorizing that they actually fulfilled the course. So there will be two different certifications that people will get. They seemed pleased about that. How many did we have, Tony?
Oh, I didn't count, but there's not as many, but it's
25 or 30 about in level 4, probably 30. And that was in them being called at the last minute, and there was evidently no bulletins posted about the workshop today starting. So we're hoping that the conversation I have with the chaplain after we get back is a little different than what it looks like we've done up till now.
Well, we hold the space for that to happen, and that he realizes with the value that they're getting and the benefit that the prison's getting as well as the prisoners that that they'll be supportive in starting next week with the 16 weeks and moving forward.
Well, that's what we're shooting for, but we did have a good session. It was nice to review some of the why material. We talked about sharing some of the importance of laws versus rules. Got into that somewhat. I touched on Rachma and Kuba. So I actually covered quite a bit in an hour. And I think we were able to spur a fair amount of interest. I did the Aramaic Our Father again, which I find to be very powerful, and they seem to really appreciate it. They asked me to do it again, and they also want to get some information about the prayers, which I'm going to put together as well. So that's what I have. Let me see what Tony might have to share.
Fabulous.
Rex, just so you know, there's also, you can go to the website, and there's in the interpretation of the Lord's Prayer and different things on the website already about that, too, that you can just print off.
Yeah, I have a copy of that as well. Thank you.
Well, one of the good things about the way things turned out, I felt, was because they had to do an individual call-out for the prisoners to come, they kind of came at one at a time, and so it gave an opportunity for us to talk one-on-one with a few of the prisoners, and I was pretty excited to listen to one of the prisoners talk about his experiences with using the worksheet. You could really tell he's very engaged in the work and doing the work and had process of...
Jeannie, I've lost
Tony. Well, I was wondering if it was just me. Tony, you've disappeared. I was getting ready to redial in. I thought maybe it was my phone.
Nope, it's not you.
I think that maybe Michael's called them back or something. So anyway... until they get back in with us, 646-200-4169, and press 1. That puts you in queue to talk to us. And we have nobody else with their hand up. So welcome, Dr. Tim, while we're waiting on them to call back in.
Are you back, Michael?
I am, yes. And they called me on the other line, so they're calling right back in again. They lost their connection, so they should be right back. So how do you be, Dr. Tim?
I'm doing well. I'm just anxious to hear the rest of the story from the prisons because I know they're on a tight schedule.
Okay, they're back on.
Well, hi. Sorry about that.
Tony?
Yes. So one of the things that I noticed that ended up working out well, with prisoners coming in one at a time because they had to do a call-out for each of the prisoners individually. So each
right.
of them kind of trickled in at one at a time and gave an opportunity for us to talk to them individually as they came in. And I was happy to see one of the prisoners talked about his process with using the worksheet. And he was really involved in talking about his process, and you could tell he's been really doing the work and really engaged with it. And so it did open up that opportunity just to talk individually with the different prisoners.
Well, it was probably all just perfectly arranged then.
Yep.
And
well,
there's a little more time to get set up for next week. So that's probably just perfect.
Well, and that's what Tony and I both were just smiling at each other as we watched one event after another event unfold, and we're still sitting there with maybe one or two prisoners at 9:30, and it was kind of like, well, there's obviously a reason this is unfolding because everything seemed to be ready, but we were ready, but evidently the wholeness had a different idea about it. So again, it's one
well,
of those wonderful.
I was going to say, it sounds like perhaps the inspiration you're able to be might just open the door for more people to start next week, too. So it sounds perfect.
Well, that's exactly what we came up with. So I did what I could, and Tony did what he could. Together, we did what we could to inspire them to share and to bring it in. And it'll also give us the opportunity that I guess the chaplain didn't ever post it either. So I'm going to get after him this afternoon and see if he'll be willing to do that.
And maybe they'll do some extra work on it this time. So that may all just work out for the better. We'll just say thank you.
Exactly. I have not found a better way of doing it, actually, other than just being gracious and holding the presence of love. And I sure do appreciate the work that we did at the 16-day intensive because I've seen substantial changes in my regulatory thinking and the way my mind is offering things to me as options versus going into a reactive mode.
Fabulous. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Actually, I'm working on a, I had sent out, actually, they all bounced back. I'm not sure what happened, so I'll be resending it. The new pages for session one from Laws of Living that are edited, some changes there, which you already have a copy of, but I'm also working on session two, and I'm doing some significant editing on the
essays?
Article that goes with it. And so I'm actually, once we complete with you, I'm going to be reading a little bit of the new material that's in the essay for session two, and hopefully before the day is out or perhaps tomorrow, I'll get that off to everybody that was in the class. So.
Well, that's awesome. Well, we sure do appreciate everybody. And, also, well, we're getting an echo. Can you hear the echo too?
No, you're clear here.
Okay. Well, we appreciate everyone and all the loving support that you send. And, we're ready to have the other people that are wanting to be a part of our group are ready to go. We're just waiting on the clearing of that. So an extra, intention there to have everything move forward so we can get the extra support. And if anybody feels inclination to want to support financially, they can go to my website, and I've got a PayPal account that's a donation. And that sure would help because we're funding this ourselves, and there's a fair amount of expense involved in the copies and everything else happening. And we do have a person that's going to be supporting us this time around. But, we're seeing this just to be a much bigger picture than just working with this one prison. So love and appreciate all the love and support and the consciousness. And God bless everybody. Stay with it. Appreciate you.
All right. Bye. We hold the space for your visit this afternoon and getting started again next week. So blessings and love and much appreciation to both of you for the work you're doing.
Thanks, everyone, and thanks, Michael.
All right, take care.
Bye now.
Blessings. Bye-bye. So let's say hello to Dr. Tim. See how the young man be.
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Fabulous. Anything exciting on your mind today?
Well, I mean, the big thing so far this morning is the idea of past traumas and how we've already lived through it, and by locking it away in the unconscious and deciding it is too much for us to deal with, we end up locking in the pain and adding energy to the negative material that's in there, and by dismantling those false realities, we actually create a much lighter load, and we open the possibility for a way of life that we can't imagine until after we do it. And that's been the theme so far this morning, people facing past memories of past traumas that they've avoided for years, and then realizing, oh my gosh, I can't believe I waited this long to do this work. I can't believe that I feel so much better, and nothing's really changed except I'm now accepting the memory and not judging myself for it. So that would be the theme for today. And I posted on my blog a little summary of last week's work titled The Distorting Power of the Way We Want Things to Be. And you'll remember the discussion from last week around that.
Yes, sir.
So I'm still not yet working on a relationship with another woman, and the woman in the Mindshifter support group is still not
well,
yet.
Well, I hold the space for you, Dr. Tim.
I know you
like
do,
I
and
told
I thank you,
you
for that.
Like I told you in my text, you'll be a great catch for whoever she is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the confidence. And I've listened to the show twice now, and I still don't figure out where I said what you think I thought I said.
Oh, Cool. Well, it's interesting. You know, great minds think alike. And, of course, they also say fools seldom differ. So we did just have to decide or choose which category we're in. But what I was going to share as the opening for the show today from Laws of Living, I was actually awakened at 2 o'clock this morning to do some writing. And so I'm going to share a little bit of that. And it just ties in with everything you just said. So how cool is that?
Waiting to hear it.
Cool. Well, let's take a look at it. So this is, you know, in Laws of Living, there are 8 different sessions that we do over a 16-day period. And actually what Rex and Tony are starting to do is a 16-week series at the prison doing Laws of Living. And there are essays involved with each session. So this this essay from session 2 is on perception. And it starts out with a quote from the Kaboris. And so I'm just going to read it as it's written and just to kind of lay a foundation for the next level of conversation. And I'm anticipating that you know, we had a fairly large group at Laws of Living. I'm anticipating that over the next few weeks or months perhaps, we're going to have people who are at the Laws of Living class. We're going to be calling in for refinements. I've actually... As we went through the course, I did some on-the-fly editing, and I'm making some changes, and I'm going to be sending out a new version of each of the 8 sessions over the coming months. And so I'm hoping, anticipating that there will be questions on an ongoing basis as people who are at Laws of Living seek refinement. I'm specifically asking them to call into the show to ask those questions. So. This section is from Essay 2, which is Session 2, and it's this particular portion of the essay is entitled, Perception Has Quality. It can be helpful or harmful. Perception, and so it starts with a quote from the Kaboris manuscript. Perception is a light for your earthly life. Therefore, if your perception is without fault, your whole life shall be enlightened. If your perception be evil, and remember that in Aramaic the word evil means unripened or incomplete, off base. You know, when one fires an arrow at a target in Aramaic to miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells sin. To miss the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell out evil. So if your perception be totally off target or evil, your whole life shall be darkened by it. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? So this is a quote from the Aramaic New Testament. This quote, using first century word meanings, is from a translation from the ancient Kaboris manuscript written in the language of Galilee, Aramaic. It flatly states that the quality of our perception is the guiding light for our lives. It is a light that can guide well if the first law, Rachma, is honored and in place. It can also darken and fail. If that light is out, if perception be darkened, how deep will the darkness of life become? Excessive stress so created leads to rage, relationship destruction, infidelity, financial ruin, murder, spousal, self, and child abuse, disease, criminality, alcohol and drug abuse, overeating, mental suffering, and dementia. Fear and hostility are the darkness that, if they become the light, that is, guidance we follow, human life, love, is lost and everything is compromised. One can only imagine the dangers to a life whose guiding light is dimmed and lost. Perhaps it is like the dangers to a car speeding down the highway on a very dark night when the headlights go out and the road disappears from the driver's sight. There is a sensed warning when the headlights go out. The road cannot be seen. Remedial action is quickly begun. The darkening of life's light is more dangerous, for there is no overt sensed failure as with the loss of the headlights. The failure of life's light is not an occurrence which can be perceived by the sense organs. The warnings, however, are clear if we are awake and have trained ourselves to heed the danger signs. They are dual. That is, the danger signs are dual. awareness of love, that is, human life is lost, and fear and hostility take its place. The sense organs are not affected by this darkness in the normal sense. Remedial action rarely occurs without outside assistance, and it is urgent to learn willingness, cosmic grace, to let go of resistance and accept support in returning to love. Fear and hostility are deadly masters to follow when they rear their ugly heads. The warning of ancient scripture is plain. Our perception has a quality. Poor perception will damage life. Perception through Rachma helps it. It is imperative that one develop a personal code that demands a return to active love if it is lost for perception. When clouded by fear and or hostility, it cannot guide one to a behavior that will reduce stress. A habit of setting Rachma and Kubha and a strong and true personal code are the keys to maintaining an accurate guidance system and regaining human life if it is lost. The statement from ancient scripture indicating perception had a quality and could enlighten or darken a life was thus supported by the testimony of a neuropsychologist before a congressional subcommittee in 1962. We can have poor goals, which will cause us to fill the few slots of conscious awareness with dross rather than gold. After recoding the sense data for storage, we may err in the word link we've associated with it. If we associate a word different from what others use, we cannot communicate with them about it, nor will we perceive what they intended when they used a different word for that perception. Common endeavor and cooperation become difficult. The idea of survival of the fittest is a falsehood. Survival of the most cooperative is the law. Where the vocabulary is confused, cooperation is lost in the home, the workplace, the nation, and the world. War, personal and global, becomes the norm. There are forces that have worked hard and long to create and maintain confusion by progressive destruction of the meaning of our words. And then there's a second title, Defiling Perception by Confusing the Vocabulary. The second source of perceptual error, confusion over the word assigned to a perception or other mind function, has a long, long history of damage to human endeavor. When Lenin, former premier of Bolshevik Russia, was asked how to destroy a country, he responded, quote, first confuse the vocabulary. This has clearly occurred in lawless America. Rose Wilder Lane, in her 1943 book, The Discovery of Freedom. By the way, you can download that book online free at the Mises Institute website. Pretty incredible book. And Rose Wilder Lane is the daughter of the woman who wrote the Little House on the Prairie series, and I understand that she had some input to that as well. But so Rose Wilder Lane, in her 1943 book, The Discovery of Freedom, stated, today the confusion of the meaning of words in America is a danger to the whole world. That goes back to 1943. Lenin was not original. In Genesis 11:6-19, the Lord, and we point out in brackets, not the Creator, is credited with this approach many years ago to halt construction of the Tower of Babel. It is noted that at one time the whole world used the same language. The potential greatness of the human race from this fact, plus its early construction of the tower, apparently alarmed the controllers of humanity. It is reported that, quote, the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, which ended progress on the tower. Apparently, use of speech units with which to identify perceptions and to organize mental functions is unique to the human mind. This lays it open to mental confusion, difficulty, and increasing stress by confusing the vocabulary. The great Soviet neuropsychologist A.R. Luria, whose father was an Aramaic preacher, in his 1958 book, The Role of Speech and the Regulation of Normal and Abnormal Behavior, states that a child's mind soon becomes capable of actively modifying the reality in which it lives and adjusting behavior to the altered reality. The modifying agent, Luria states, is speech, which it has associated with a stimulus from the actuality. Use of speech to affect mental functions in the human mind continues to develop until the final stage is reached at about 13 years of age. In this stage, states Dr. Luria, the decisive influence is then exerted by internal speech, of which we are unconscious, on all mental functions. The only known language that reflects this understanding in its syntax is Aramaic. The addition of the suffix, quote-unquote, uta, O-O-T-A, to a word indicates that decisions and behaviors are controlled from this unconscious level of mental function. This internal speech, of which we are unaware, has an impact on its associated stimuli before its conversion into the perceived reality. So that's kind of a little window on some of the direction that we go with laws of living. And as I say, I anticipate that we'll be hearing from more folks who were at the Laws of Living course as we send the rewrites out and we get questions on clarification of some of the points. But to recognize, and it's interesting that A.R. Luria, as well as, of course, everybody knows Pavlov, were both Russian psychologists. And interestingly enough, both of them had fathers who were Aramaic preachers. They had access to Aramaic understanding, which is one of the reasons why they were able to create the process that was called brainwashing and have had such a detrimental impact on the world, because their minds, seemingly having the Aramaic understanding, learned how to use words to confuse the vocabulary, and ultimately, as Lenin says, you want to destroy society, just change the meaning of its words. And so a major part of the Laws of Living course is to bring correction to that vocabulary, and it just makes such monumental shifts. And of course, you just heard Rex, who's been doing this work for over 30 years, in 16 days see a total shift in his mind, and the process of Laws of Living just unfolds a whole way of understanding and shifting perception, as Rex referred to, and it's pretty awesome, and I get the blessing of getting to teach it every year. Rex is going to start to do that blessing for himself, and it'll be interesting after 16 weeks of teaching it to hear Rex's input, because, you know, there's that old saying that comes from, who is it that says, we teach best that which we most need to learn, and so I'll be excited to hear Rex talk about his shifts as he teaches the 16-week Laws of Living course. So that's kind of an exciting process that's happening. And Dr. Tim, how does that quote impact the way that you see things from the point of view of your work as a psychologist?
Well, I think it's, you know, as you keep saying, it's right on target. It's at the heart of how we create our perceptions is what's resonating in our minds already. And most of it has been placed there through language. I mean, at least what's been happening since we were conscious in this existence. There's certainly a lot of energy and impressions that we inherit from our genetics and the energenetics, I call it, the energy and the genetics of our generations. But for the stuff that I've accumulated in this lifetime, it's resonating in my mind the way it was placed there through my language about it. So I'm creating my perceptions in each moment by what's getting resonated from my past. And I'm literally creating experiences in this moment from my past. So I'm not really living in the present unless I learn the keys that an article like the one you just described can reveal to me.
Awesome. And, you know, it's interesting, of course, when we hear and understand that it's possible to make the kind of shift that we're talking about. Everybody wants to be there yesterday. Everybody wants to storm the gates and arrive at the final result in some sort of a short form, magical thinking type fashion. We all want to be there. Of course, that's pretty natural. And when you look at the Aramaic, there's the understanding that you can't storm the gates. If you try to get there prematurely, you're going to frustrate and overwhelm yourself. I love what happened with Moses. You know, Moses has gone through some pretty heavy-duty hostility and fear. You know, if you look at his life, he was a pretty heavy-duty character. And he says to the Creator, you know, when the Creator starts to communicate with him, he says, "Oh, man, this is so cool. Show me your face. I want to see your face." And God says, "If you saw my face, you would surely die." In other words, he's saying, "Moses, look, you've got yourself at a level of function where you're functional. And that's cool. But if you were to have the whole revealed to you in this instant, you would be a babbling idiot. You would not be able to function. You would be functionally dead." I can remember when I had, for want of a better term, what I call an opening experience, where I saw things which, as Paul talks about, I could not utter. It was just so far out of the realm of any perceptual reality that fits with the world. And I was after doing this work for about 15 years. And I can remember being so excited. And each time I asked a question in that state, I was given a full visual picture and the silent auditory answer. And it was like just so, I mean, the level of aliveness and excitement and presence of love was just awesome and monumental. And I can remember saying to myself, "Oh man, this is so cool. I knew there was a reason for doing my work. Yay, look where I get to live now." And the voice came back and said, "Well, Michael, you've had a taste and you could live here, but if you're not ready for it, you'll burn your instrument out." At which point I said, "Okay, I'll go back and do my work." And so, you know, I just continue to do my work and get a taste of a deeper level each time I'm ready for a new taste. But when you start recognizing that this body-mind unit, the thing which sets up our perception, is literally a multi-generational database that has literally the energetic influences of millions of lives, everybody wants it undone and redone yesterday and wants to magically get there, and you just can't do it. You've got to take the time to do your work step by step, stage by stage. You get insights, but if you try to make that insight you, then it leads to destructive results. So it's a pretty, just kind of an interesting process. And the root of perception, one of the Beatitudes, it didn't actually go into the translation on the poster that we published because we couldn't really totally verify it with first century definitions. But in essence, what it says is that you get this neural structure that the Creator implanted in you to guide you to happiness and well-being. You get that activated, those who are in possession and control of the source of their thinking. You don't do 6 days, you know, you don't do a weekend, 6 days, 6 months, 6 years of work and go, "Well, see, now I'm in charge of it. Now I got it handled." It is a lifetime of work. And, you know, sometimes we just need to slow down and take it step by step, piece by piece, and move through it. So it's a pretty exciting process to have that awareness and to be able to work through what needs to be worked through to take it to the next level and to let go of the need to be there yesterday. So how's that fit in your work with people, Dr. Tim? How do you see, does that fit and make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are people who, without reason to be able to explain it, make huge jumps in just a session or two. But most of the people that I've worked with over the years that have made the lasting progress have done it by applying tools daily for months and months and months. And it isn't a matter of they have to work for months before they see any benefit. They start seeing benefits right away, but they don't jump to the huge progress. Like, you know, Rex was just saying, he's noticed after this intensive a whole new level of his ability to be aware in the moment and process things. prior to this, I think if you had asked Rex, he would have said, he's good, he's doing it well, he's staying in the present moment, he's presenting love. But now he realizes there's a whole different level of honesty with himself and being centered that he's achieved that he didn't even know was possible before, because he couldn't even see the space where he is from where he was until he did the gradual work and the chipping away at whatever resistance or fears or false judgments that he was carrying. And, you know, I've had some people I've worked with for 4 and 5 years, and at the end of that period, they're opening up to things they never would have dreamed they could look at even a year or two before. And with the application of the tools and with the willingness, things beyond our imagination are possible. I like the way he talks about it. He says, your faith must be in things unseen, not things seen. And then he goes on to explain that if you can imagine it, it's already been seen. So what we're really looking for is something that's beyond our ability to perceive, beyond our current perception and conception. And the only way to get there is to keep doing the work and being willing to dismantle and question everything that we already know and stay open to something absolutely new to come to us, to educate us, to transform us, or to be integrated within us at a higher level. And that's something I can't really put words on. I just have to be open to the experience and application of the tools to put myself in a position where I'm, as you said, I'm a suitable vessel for that new energy.
Exactly. And, you know, the truth is that what we're looking for is what is looking. And, you know, if you go to the Eastern Orthodox teachings, the whole idea was incarnation, that the being had to incarnate. But being, the purity of love, can't incarnate in an instrument that has 1,000 generations of hate and fear and anger and rage and guilt and grief and pain and trauma and drama. It can't fully incarnate because its energetic patterns don't support it. And it takes literally years of work, a committed, consistent, persistent work. I know, you know, we have a mutual friend that after doing this work for a little while had referred to the fact that, you know, I've been doing this work for 45 years and I'm not finished yet, therefore the work must be, you know, pretty much void. And the truth is that when you're recognizing the depth of integrated energies in this instrument, you know, I sometimes use the example of, you know, Mozart is flying through the air right now. I'm sure if I turned on an FM receiver on some station, I'd be able to receive Mozart. And I can take a $10 transistor radio and tune into that station. I can listen to Mozart. It's going to be a pretty interesting experience to listen to Mozart on a $10 transistor radio. Or I can have a $100,000 stereo system, and I'm going to hear Mozart in a whole different way, the difference being the instrument. And if you've got an instrument that comes from 1,000 generations of rage and guilt and grief and war, and who on this planet hasn't been touched by those things, you don't transform the depth of the instrument to bring forward Mozart, that is, being to its full expression after, you know, 6 months, a year, 2, 5, 10 years of work. It's a long-term project to rewrite the whole code and to develop the skills. It is, you know, it's a skill set. It's not just having information or knowledge. You know, we can have all the knowledge in the world, but if we haven't developed the skill set, you know, I can know what it is to be a world championship weightlifter, But if I don't have the skill set, I'm not going into, you know, the world championships and winning next year. It's just not going to happen. I'm going to have to take that knowledge that I have, and I'm going to have to integrate it into my form so that my form is capable of doing what it takes to lift those weights. And in precisely the same way as one does their work, the incarnation of being means that we have to develop the skill set to grasp everything that's in this structure, to learn to decode what never belonged and remove what never belonged, that is, engage in the forgiveness process and make a space. There's an awesome line in the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic that can be properly translated as, carve out a space in us for your wholeness. The forgiveness process carves out that space. And that, to me, is what it's really all about and why the long-term process of doing the work is a requirement. So let's just check in Dr. Tim and see if we have any hands up in the phone queue or if there's anything happening in the chat room that we should be aware of. Jeannie, do we have anything?
There's nothing going on in the chat room, but we do have a couple of hands up on the switchboard, and the first one, I think, is Mark Haddis, area code 630. Are you on the air?
Hey, Jeannie, Michael, and Dr. Tim.
Oh, hey, cool. Good to hear your voice,
Rex.
Sir. How do you be?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Good.
I thought I'd share a couple of relevant things on the topic that you're dealing with today, because I'm the classic storm the gates guy, and I've done it twice.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I've done it twice now, and I can assure everybody that it's not a great idea. And thankfully, Dr. Tim was available for supporting me this past week, and Rex has been just absolutely exceptional at supporting me through it and saw what was occurring and helped bring some calm into my home and with my wife. And I wanted to share an example of what can occur without getting into the drama details of the story. There was
cool. Let's hear it. What happened?
Well, the summary is that I, for those who have known me, they may be aware that a couple years ago I had what would be considered a mania episode and ended up in the hospital for a week getting support. I had a lot of fear around that, and Michael, you and I spoke a couple months after that. That's what led me to your work, because I saw that this work was something that could help bring wholeness to my mind instead of the bipolar aspect of the split mind, where goals are in such conflict that we have these ups and downs of mania and depression. Thankfully, I didn't have
right.
the depression side of it then, and I hold the space that won't occur this time either. So it was, in essence, that was, you had taught me then that was really a healing crisis, a kind of a real breakthrough. And this time what was occurring was I had been writing daily and doing work constantly. I mean, I was doing this work 8 to 10 hours a day, though I didn't even really know it, because it had become such a normal part of my routine. I'd get up in the morning, go to Starbucks, and I'd write for my book. But in my writing, I was really expressing my truth. And in expressing the truth, as it says in the Beatitude, that's part of the healing process, is professing those truths that we've been in denial of. And I had spent most of my life, honestly, in denial of the truth and judging the world and judging myself. And so in unwinding that, I got into this rhythm where I was professing these truths, but I was doing it with my family. And it was triggering a lot of fear in them. It was triggering their fear.
So, and playing John the Baptist?
Yes.
That's exactly what John the Baptist did. You know, he brought truth to those who were in blockage of truth. And, you know, one doesn't necessarily have to be in some sort of conscious denial. They just have to buy into the world's belief system. And if you buy into the world's belief system, then the real truth about who we are as these beings called love is just not very acceptable in the world. It's like, you know, are you crazy? Get out of here.
And there was a little bit of that going on. Now, here's a couple of things that I wanted to share that I think might help people as they progress in this work. One, I got it in my head, this idea that I liked to be triggered. I liked being triggered because it offered me an opportunity to heal. And so I had it in my mind, though, that triggering someone meant triggering them with their negative emotions or what would be perceived as negative, meaning their fears and hostilities, anger, sadness. And so I actually believed that I was doing my family a favor, and maybe in truth I was in a way, but it was very disruptive. It didn't have to be this way. And I,
yeah, you want to be careful of that one.
So I would say things that would trigger their fear, and they, in one minute they'd be laughing, the other minute they'd be like, Mark, what are you talking about? You know, and then so that's one thing, and I shifted that after this episode to realize to choose something that you taught me back in April of 2012, that if it's unlike love, or if it's not a loving thought, or it's not going to support a loving outcome, then it's not from love. And I think that that was, and maybe I'm not even remembering that exactly the way you intended it, but as I was in it, I realized, or as I was through it, I realized looking back that, yeah, I really needed some professional help from someone like Dr. Tim, a counselor who I could profess these truths with, who could hold that space of love without being triggered. And that's what occurred. So I went back in the hospital for a couple of days, and the counselors and therapists there were amazing, and they allowed me to express all this stuff that I was expressing in my home, but they just laughed. They're kind of, I mean, I was in serious distress, but I could see them laughing and having fun with me, and me having fun with them, and them kind of saying, hey, Mark, it's okay. You can say whatever you want, and we're going to just be like this. And they were, I had judged the psychology space of that, those hospitals, I'm not even sure the right name. Dr. Tim, what do you call those hospitals, like a Linden Oaks?
Well, they've got an inpatient psychiatric hospital.
Okay.
Inpatient psychiatric unit on a hospital.
And I got to tell you, the first time I went, I judged them like, oh, I don't belong here, you know, and this is just the healing crisis, you know, these guys don't know what they're talking about. And this time, I went in surrendering because I knew I needed some help. And Rex, thank you for helping me realize that. And I just saw them as pure love, and that's how they showed up. And so because I saw them that way, they showed up in the way that I most needed, but they were brilliant and did everything absolutely perfectly for my restoration. I was only there for a few days, and it was great. And now that I'm home, I'm realizing that some of my definitions, which is what prompted me to call because you were talking about words, some of my definitions of words had been changed from what I perceive them to be of the world to love, defined words. And so, for example, I honestly had suicidal thoughts. Now, I'm not a suicidal person, but I had these thoughts. I was kind of on the razor's edge of going to get help or, like, leaving the planet. And the truth is I don't think I ever would have done it, but those thoughts were so persistent. And then finally I said, because I had asked Ruka to redefine my words so that the words were in line with the definitions of Ruka. And my, and so finally I said, what does it mean to kill yourself? And the response was, well, it means a spiritual death. It's a, it's the first death. And I'm like, oh, well, and then I started asking about the definitions of other words I was using, and they were different. And so perhaps because I stormed the gate and asked for that, I got it. But when I got it, I didn't believe I had it until I was in that mode where I was consciously asking, okay, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? And I've been having a lot of fun kind of recreating a little personal dictionary, because my words now, when I ask myself, well, what does this mean? It's very different than what I had once thought that those words mean. Does that make sense, or am I confusing people?
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. Question, is there any suicide in your family history, mom or dad's side, that you know of?
I am not aware of any suicide in the family history, yet I've, for some reason in this incarnation of myself, I've carried those energies in. And so when I was a boy, I thought I had a real hard time in the seventh grade, and I just wanted to leave the planet. I wasn't suicidal, like I was young and I wasn't ready to do anything about it, but somehow I had those energies within me.
Well, it sounds like, you know, if you had that happening back at the age of seven and hitting new levels of vitality, that that would be something that would come up and process out. And I bring that up specifically to explain the healing crisis aspect of things, in that when we hit new levels of vitality, there are three levels of energy that need to be processed: the physical, the mental, and the emotional. And on a physical level, it looks like any kind of physical symptom we've ever had in low energy. On a mental level, it looks like any kind of negative thought and confusion. Emotional level, any kind of negative feeling and depression. So that's why oftentimes the mania is, you know, has the opposite side of the depression. And if someone has, especially if it's a known situation of suicide in the family system somewhere back, that there's a very real possibility that those thoughts, those energies, those feelings that accompany the desire for self-destruction are going to surface. And it's really, I think, important for people to understand that these are old energies that are coming up to be processed out, so that one doesn't get lost in them and actually carry out an act that that would be self-destructive. I know that you know, one of the things we talk about with the four things that tell you that your symptoms are healing in process, the fourth one, if you remember, is that I crave the drug that I used to suppress or to shut this energy down initially. And this is, I think, especially important for people who are coming out of things like AA programs or NA, and that is that when one hits, you know, we've all heard of the guy who was, you know, he just gotten his 30-year chip, he's flying high, he's hit a new level of vitality, and then we hear he fell off the wagon, and he fell off the wagon because he didn't know that with his new high and his new vitality, he was processing out an old issue, maybe that goes back to early years of drinking and what have you, and that there are literally molecules of that alcohol still locked in tissue, locked in crystals within the structure. And as they start to surface, you know, why did the guy fall off the wagon? Because he wasn't aware that he was in process and moving that out. And, you know, because the alcohol was being released on a cellular level and took over awareness, you know, fell off the wagon. In the same way, if one's aware that, gee, in my genetic history, there's some suicide, then suicidal thoughts may come up. And if I'm aware of that, I can go, oh, here's one of my suicidal thoughts, and I can forgive it. I can throw it out rather than get lost in it. It's, I think, really an important principle to understand in that healing process.
Well, and another thing along those lines as to kind of how this played out, which supports what you're saying, the 2 days prior to this event, I had come into the realization that my family, I saw my family for the first time as just pure love. I saw that they had never done anything wrong. They're perfect exactly the way they are. Not just my immediate family, but my mom and dad and my sister and my nephews and nieces. We had this occasion where we were all together. And I went to
New
bed.
Level of vitality.
Absolutely. And I went to bed
yeah.
that night.
Huge.
And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I thought I was having a heart attack. And my heart just felt like it was ripping. And
yep.
I remembered
yep.
that when I was a boy, I said, if I ever had the perfect family, that I could die a happy man. And when that thought came up, the heart felt like it was
Ouch.
Ripping more. And I literally thought I was having a heart attack. And I told my wife, call 911. And I was freaking out. And she was actually calm. She was like, Mark, just relax and breathe. You know, and, you know, I could have just listened to her. But I persisted, you know, because I saw a vision in my mind or a visual of me running outside to get to the ambulance and collapsing on the front lawn and dying. And part of me was saying, yeah, but I'm going to die a happy man. But part of me is like, yeah, but now that I see the truth, I want to live. And it was this.
Yeah,
pull.
And notice how that ties into the suicidal thoughts as well.
Exactly. That's how, right. And that's what, like, suicide actually didn't mean what I thought suicide meant. See what I mean?
Right.
The definition,
yep.
this was it. This was it. It was not suicide.
Yeah, the average person
was,
in this culture, has lost their life by the age of 4. That first death, as you mentioned, happens by the age of 4 for most people in this culture. And to recoup that space and come back to the true being, that's, in the ancient teachings, that was what was called overcoming. So to he that overcomes, he will not taste of the second death. If I've dealt with the first death where I lost my spiritual awareness, then I don't have to kill my body, will not taste of the second death. In fact, it goes on to say he will become a pillar in the temple of my God and shall go out no more. In other words, you're not going to kill another body. It wasn't designed to die in the first place. Your human energy system was designed by the Creator to live for eternity.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'll buy into
yeah,
that.
And that's a promise. Yeah. So, you know, you listen to those words from Revelations. Will be to he that overcomes, he will become a pillar in the temple of my God. What is the temple? It's not a building. It's your body. You're the temple of the Creator, will become a pillar, that's a fixture, and shall go out no more. You're not going to have to kill another one. But you got to overcome the frequencies, the generational propensity toward death and the frequencies of death. The hatred, the fear, the hostility, the grief, the pain, the drama, the trauma are the things that kill us. And the overcoming of those things is to be able to maintain the presence of a human life, that awesome presence of love. When those things surface and go through the healing of them, that's the overcoming. And then we move into, you know, what human life was really designed for. And, you know, as the ancient scriptures say, the mind of man is not yet conceived of what lies in store, what's possible. If we all did that overcoming process and started to truly live as that awesome newborn presence of love we're designed to live as, how different would this whole game be? How different would this whole planet be? Such a transformation is unimaginable. And fortunately, Yeshua said, and this is the thing that keeps me going, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. The whole game can be changed. And you know what? We're down to just a few seconds, I just realized. The warning just came in to let me know. And I think it would be awesome if you got the space for us to continue this conversation tomorrow, because I think it's such a pertinent and important conversation to have, so that people can begin to conceive of what is possible when we actually do our work and move past the perceptions of the generations, you know, getting out of the desert into conscious co-creation.
So I'll just say that we do have to close the show out at this moment, and I apologize for doing it on this note because the conversation could easily go on for another hour. But we'll do that tomorrow if that works for you, Mark, and Dr. Tim and Jeannie. And you know, maybe Rex will be able to be with us since he's in the prison right now. He hasn't been able to hear this show. We'll have to tap him in so he can give it a listen with the acknowledgments of his support and such for you. And we appreciate you all, and we hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.